time.
Hi, my name is Amanjo Kaur, and I'm from UC Davis Plant Sciences Department. I'm in plant breeding and genetics. And the talk's title for today is Evaluating a Handheld Visible Near-Infrared Device as an In-Field On-Plant High-Throughput Phenotyping Tool in Tomato and Pepper Fruit Quality Breeding. Very long name, I know. So first of all, why do we even worry about high-throughput phenotyping? As we know, plant breeders have to evaluate lots and lots of genetically diverse material across replicated field trials. And we know that that entails a way of rapidly and accurately phenotyping lots of number of plants in the field to really identify and select plants that are superior or populations that are superior and move forward in the plant breeding pipeline. So we can say that the trait phenotyping and the associated time, labor, and cost really boils down to being a major bottleneck in the plant breeding pipeline. And if we're talking about food quality traits in vegetable crops, then you have to add in laborious post-harvest processing, biochemical assays with expensive chemicals, and specialized equipment. So we know that if we have high-throughput phenotyping tools, we can really achieve, or at least try to achieve, that breeding efficiency. So if we're talking about high-throughput phenotyping tools, why would we want a handheld device other than not a handheld device? So we need something that can be easily accessible to a breeder in the field. As we know, as plant scientists and plant breeders, fields are generally not so pretty, and it gets really, really hot too. So we need things that can handle and really tolerate those type of temperature variations and real in-time field conditions and still be able to tell us non-destructively internal fruit quality traits that breeders are interested in. And that's sort of where spectroscopy comes in. We can really capitalize on absorption of energy from molecules in these regions. As we know that, so basically when you have a fruit, a biological sample such as a fruit, and you have light interacting, you have light hitting the surface of the fruit, and then inside, the light is undergoing spectral changes as it's interacting with the fruit's internal organic matter. Basically, there's a lot of magic happening at a penetration depth inside a fruit. And in the end, basically, we end up with some form of spectrum, whether that's reflectance or then you transform it into another format, such as an absorption spectrum. So the point is that when all of that stuff happens, in the end, we get the spectrum that we can use. And then why we use visible and near infrared regions is because we know that major structures of organic compounds and functional groups such as CH bonds, OH bonds, they can be detected within these ranges. So as I said, we get a spectrum out, so you would think, okay, like we can go ahead and then use it for our plant models. However, you have to baby it a little bit, you have to clean it up, you have to get rid of the things that you do not want, because you only want the information that is relevant to fruit quality. So all of that basically comes under a fancy term such as chemometrics. So that just means that you're using all kinds of things such as treatments, pre-processing treatments, regression techniques to basically really parse out the spectroscopy data, and then we can use that for modeling. So the goal of our study was to basically see if we can use something that is already on the market, a post-harvest quality spectrometer such as Felix 750, if we can use that and then see for high-throughput phenotyping for fruit quality trait breeding in the field and on the plant. In order to do that, we wanted to assess fruits of diverse genotypes. So we were working with introgression lines that had introgressions from a wild tomato relative, and then we were also working with inbred cultivars, and then in peppers, we were working with open-pollinated cultivars, F1 hybrids, multi-way hybrids, and all kinds of really diverse genetic material. And then we also wanted to impose a layer of environmental variation so we can see if a device such as this can handle that. In order to do that, we imposed normal and reduced irrigation treatments. For tomato, I was working with a relatively severe water treatment because of the material that we were working with had introgressions from, like I said, from a wild relative, which is known to confer water stress tolerance. Whereas for peppers, I was working with relatively mild water treatment because the open pollinated cultivars and other hybrids, they were not selected for water stress tolerance in their breeding, so we did not want to kill them. So basically the point was, in a nutshell, if we can use something like this to build and assess predictive models for fruit quality traits that we're interested in. So to go in a little more detail, the main objective was, like I said, to see if we can build and validate fruit quality trait-based PLSR models using the spectroscopy data from Felix. And then I wanted to take a step back and then not worry about the modeling and then see what is the spectroscopy data telling us. Can we see any patterns in the spectroscopy data irrelevant of the fruit quality trait information of the samples if we can see, if we can impose variables that we're interested in, such as irrigation treatments, the type of genetic material we were working with. And I shaded this region because that was another objective, which I will not be talking about today. That's more engineering and statistics related. And that was just that we wanted to see if we can detect any significant associations between the wavelength-specific spectroscopy data and plant experimental factors that we are interested in as breeders, such as interactions, G by E, and things like that. And that was with mixed effects models. So I'm just going to be giving just very simple example of the first two so you sort of get an idea of what it is that we did. And these are just the traits that we were interested in for tomato, basic processing traits, and then for pepper, health and moisture related traits. And I'll just be giving one example of carotenoid concentration. As we know, those are pigments that give fruits their color and flowers. So I'm just going to give an example of that trait since that was shared among our tomato and pepper material. So first of all, without going into the jargon, when we say that we have a good fitting model, we have a poor fitting model, and we have a so-so moderate fitting model, there's a lot of parameters that go in there in the regression techniques that we use. For example, you know, what's the error rate? What you're predicting, how much is that deviating from the actual value, and what is the correlation. So there's a lot of statistical parameters that you do not need to worry about. So as you know, you've heard of R-squared values, and there's something called residual predictive deviation. It's just a deviation value. The higher it is, the better your model is. So for tomato, for all of the traits that we evaluated our material, the models were very, very poor fitting. And then when we decided to divide the data based on samples of water treatment, if they came from normal or the severe reduced treatment, it didn't seem to help the models at all. And then when we decided to do the same thing for peppers in the different data sets, pepper models had far more predictive capacity than models. We actually had really great models with excellent RPD values and high R-squared values. I was sort of very surprised because I was seeing very bad results, and then I went onto this one, and then it was great. And then I also want to clarify that in pepper material that I was working with, I had all kinds of market classes and then different types of color groups, and by market classes, what I mean is, you know, peppers can be used for spice, peppers can be ground down, peppers can be used for fresh use, pickled, and all kinds of market uses. So I had very diverse material. I'm in all kinds of colors, and I decided to divide the data based on the maturity genotype group. And what I mean by that is early season genotype groups of fruits when they are early in their horticultural timeline, and then marketable, which is the stage that they're commercially acceptable at, that you would purchase at a grocery store, and then late stage would be their ripe stage, but before they're overripe. So I had the data divided in those genotype groups, and I had trait modeling within each genotype group. So for here, I'm only talking about the carotenoids trait in the early season genotype group. So the performance of pepper models was very trait specific and very genotype group specific. And then when I did the same thing by dividing the data based on the samples from normal treatment or reduced treatment, even though we had a mild pepper treatment, it seemed to improve the models for peppers. And like I said, it didn't help with tomatoes at all. So that was just one example of what I did, and there were a lot more traits that we did. And then I want to give a very simple example of just looking at the patterns on the spectroscopy data. So what you see here, there's black and there's green. So the black is representing normal water treatment. So these are spectroscopy data of samples that belong to the normal water treatment and reduced water treatment. So this has nothing to do with the fruit quality information. These are just samples. So there's black and there's green, and then there's IL, which Intergression lines, and then there's inbred, which is inbred cultivar, and this is just the tomato data for processing tomatoes. And at your first glance, you can see that there's not a whole lot of separation going on in green versus black. So that tells you that we can't really tell apart the samples that belong to either of the two treatments. And this actually made a whole lot of sense. I'm not presenting the trait data analysis using mixed models, but that also gave us similar information. So that tells us that the intergression lines that we were working with, they indeed were showing water stress tolerance, which is really great for tomatoes. And those are our lab's intergression lines. And then you can also see that the IL seemed to be far more dispersed out onto the plain relative to inbred cultivars. And that also makes sense because these intergression lines have intergressions from Solanum habrocates all over the place, which means that they are heterozygous at many loci, conferring them a lot of variation, and they probably also have a lot of linkage drag, giving them even more variability. Whereas inbred cultivars that I was using, they all belong to the commercial elite germplasm of California, and they share parentage, they're homozygous at many loci, and they're very closely related. So that also makes sense. So this was really cool that we can see that using the spectroscopy data. And then just another example of a biplot analysis without going into detail about what biplots are, and how you can use visualization vectors to view the samples that are coinciding in the same direction as the different wavelength vectors. All I want you to know is that there are red dots and there's blue dots. Red represent the samples of the fresh organic fresh market heirloom type tomato samples, and then the blue represents the processing tomatoes. So the fresh market, that's an independent study I was part of, that's for organic heirloom type tomato data, and those samples are not being grouped into the ellipse, which makes sense because they all came from F1 hybrids, multi-way hybrids, F3 families, F4 populations, and they're very, very phenotypically diverse, as we know fresh market tomatoes are. Whereas processing tomatoes, they are all sort of being grouped into that ellipse. You can't even see the ellipse anymore. Even though I said that the processing tomato data had a lot of intergression lines, means they've had more variability. However, at the end of the day, relative to fresh market tomatoes, they were all intergressions in the background of a processing tomato cultivar, which was our control. So this makes a lot of sense because processing tomatoes are bred for uniformity in a lot of the parameters that we're interested in for the processing industry. So that was really cool. And like I said, there was a lot more that I'm not presenting on, but I just wanted to give quick examples. So just to recap of the things that I did talk about, so tomato models were very poor fitting in all the traits that we evaluated. However, fitting of pepper models was great, but it was trait dependent and also maturity genotype group specific. And then model fitting improved in peppers when we divided the data based on variables of water treatment, but it didn't help in tomatoes. So this really tells us that intensity or severity of the genetically diverse material that we were worked with really tested the limit of using a technology such as Felix to make predictive models. So that's something to keep in mind if we're going further in research and related to these things. Where do you want something like this fit into the plant breeding pipeline? Is it early on in the stage when you're evaluating divergent material to decide on the parents that you want? Or is it later on when, as you're reaching more inbred material or you're evaluating lines for uniformity, or would something like this fit better in that realm of things? And then also subgrouping plant breeding materials, so in the sense of we have worked with a lot of layers as plant breeders, so it may be important to really tease out those layers and subgroup the data. I didn't present anything on fruit flesh color maturity groups, but yeah, so it would be interesting to divide the data based on those variables and then fit something like this in. So there's definitely more research that needs to be done in this aspect. And with that, I'd like to conclude and acknowledge my PI, Dr. Dina St. Clair, who's a tomato breeder and geneticist at UC Davis, and my project co-advisor, Dr. Irwin Donis Gonzalez, who's an engineer with Biological and Agricultural Engineering Department, and the crew for helping me with all my field trials. This was headquarters in field and vegetable crops at Davis for a multi-year study. And then these are other people that helped me with my research and our funding source. And with that, I'll take any questions. Thank you.
Is the Felix the actual apparatus, or is it the statistical
So I call, the question was, the Felix, is it the actual apparatus or the device? So the device's name is Felix 750 Post-Harvest Quality Spectrometer. I call it the Felix, just to keep it short. Yeah, yeah. And the company is Felix Instruments Applied Food Science. They actually have a booth here. So the question was using Felix to how to decide where to scan and how many reps and issues like that, and if there's variability. There was definitely a lot of variability. I remember my first year when I was trying to test this out, I had very small, have you seen peppercinis? They're very small, they're very shriveled. It was very hard for me to scan them, but there are different apertures, there are different openings that you can use on Felix. However, it's not perfect. That's why you have to really filter out a lot of the information, because you'll catch a lot of light and noise that you're not interested in. And then obviously there's always the issue of, you know, are you scanning at the same spot on each individual fruit? And I didn't talk about that, but that's part of my discussion, because in plant breeding, that's not efficient to be able to scan one fruit at multiple spots. But definitely that's one of the calibration methods in Felix, that if you do that, you do increase the predictive ability. But we wanted to see if we were to use in plant breeding without doing that. Another factor is also temperature, and a lot of other factors. So there's definitely variability of how many reps and where do you do it and at what point. For peppers, for me, since each genotype had its own maturity timeline, I had to monitor each individual genotype for months. Whereas for processing tomatoes, they're sort of uniform at the same time, so it was easy to pick, you know, the sort of a relative spot and then scan at the same spot. So there's definitely variations, but there are ways to get around it. Yeah. Yes.
So I also have used the Felix device in my tomato breeding program. Same as you, I didn't find any food, but
that makes me feel very good.
When I segmented my breeding line by color, by type of tomato,
So the comment was about dividing the data based on the breeding lines and the genetic parentage, I guess. So yeah, definitely that adds to it, and that's the association modeling that I did that I didn't present on. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of variability and teasing that apart. I definitely agree. Yeah. Any other questions? Yes. So the cost differs depending on if you're with university or if you're affiliated, but I think it's around $5,000 to $7,000. Yeah. And they have specialized equipment for other crops, but this is something that has never been used in vegetable crops, and specifically in tomato and peppers. But it's been shown to be helpful in a lot of tree fruits. Like apples, and there's some data on peaches and things like that, mandarin, yeah. Any other questions? Yes. Sorry, I can't hear you.
How much was the engineering involved?
Involved. Yes.
Engineering involved?
Yes.
I was the acting engineer on the project. So the question was the involvement of engineering in the project. So originally when the project was started, it was supposed to be an intercollaborative project between plant breeding and genetics and ag and bioengineering. But, you know, life plays out in many ways. And things just didn't work out, and the graduate students from the engineering department were not with us anymore. And so I had to learn the engineering. But like I said, my engineering PI, co-project advisor, Dr. Owen Donas-Gonzalez, he was the supervisor of engineering. Yeah. I would say it's a mix of both, because there's definitely a lot of, having replicated field trials, evaluating all of your material, your germplasm for performance, which is a typical breeding thing to do, and then also a lot of post-harvest and fruit biochemistry, so that involvement, and then after that, a lot of statistical, multivariate statistical modeling in engineering. So I would say it's a component of each individual thing, yeah, but it's, yeah. Yeah. Any other questions? I think I'm definitely over my time. Thank you.